You're listening to episode 357 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Delaware.
Delaware.
It was time for me to switch places. You've been traveling so much. So now I'm at a friend's house in Delaware and not at a hotel room. So
you know what the question is, David, right? What did Delaware?
I don't know. What did Delaware?
Her New Jersey.
Her New Jersey. Oh, that's just bad.
That's old. That's like, that's even older than me.
I was going to say, I thought it was my job to do the bad joke.
All right. Well, I'll defer the crown. But hey, some good stories, some interesting ones. One or two that are fun and one that kind of has got me thinking and wondering. And it's a good collection.
Oh. We've got biocomposite drone parts. Let it rain, 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 rain with a drone. Alphabet's wing isn't happy with the remote ID rule. Two guys create the Uber of drones. A Walmart drone delivery hub coming to Arkansas. A 19-year-old drone led rescuers to four lost fishermen.
Well, the drone wasn't 19. The guy.
Oh,
with the
I said 19-year-old drone, huh? Not in my normal studio, folks, so I'm thoroughly screwed up. I think we should get started.
Let's get started, David.
Well, I thought this next story was good on a Sunday, which is the Malaysian team turns pineapple waste into disposable drone parts. I thought this was a great story, an even better headline.
So some researchers at Malaysia's Putra University have created some green drone parts, things like frames primarily. But they're using fiber from discarded pineapple leaves. That's fascinating.
And they use it to make biocomposite material, greater strength to ratio than other composites, and damaged frames could be buried in the ground and would degrade within 2 weeks. You know, my question about that, though, was if you bury it in the ground and it degrades in 2 weeks, what happens if you don't bury it in the ground? Does these things degrade over time?
Yeah. If they get rained on, does it start to dissolve? But it's interesting. So this research team, they've actually created and flown a small prototype drone made out of this composite material. And they hope to build a larger drone in the future. But you know, there's some really interesting benefits from this, these biocomposite materials. One is this is stuff that the pineapple farmers just toss anyway. So you're using, you know, a byproduct of an agricultural process. And if it has economic value, then that represents additional income for the farmers. That's a great benefit right there.
And it's all biodegradable.
Yeah.
Though I wonder if it's great on pizza.
God, pizza.
But yeah, so it definitely, Max, it's one of those headlines that I wasn't really ever expecting to see, that we were going to be talking about pineapples and UAVs. But
that's right.
You know, we every week we find something new. Like the next one was a bit of a rain shower. This was from multiple stories, but China deploys large UAV for ecological protection in Gansu. They used the Wing Long 2 variant. Now, if you go look at the photographs on the show notes, this aircraft looks very similar to other aircraft.
It does. Well, the original from which this is based, and what they're doing is they're doing cloud seeding, but the original has got military applications. Other photos of the Wing Long 2 show that it's a substantial fixed-wing aircraft, 9260 pounds, 9,260 pounds. They carry air-to-ground munitions. They have a surveillance and targeting system in a synthetic radar aperture. And they've been selling them. Reportedly, China has sold 50 of these, or exported 50 of these. Customers include Saudi Arabia, Turkmenistan, and Egypt. But what they've done here, I guess, is taken that aircraft and using it to address an issue where in Western China, it's very dry, it's very arid. And what do you like to see when you have some arid land? Well, you like to see some precipitation. So maybe you can do some cloud seeding with this.
Yeah, and its maiden flight was 40 minutes, and it's called the Ganlin 1, or Sweet Rain. It performed atmospheric detection and catalyst spreading to generate participation. Out of the business world, generate precipitation. The Ganlin was also able to de-ice itself, which I thought was kind of an interesting thing. We haven't really talked about icing on UASs, where we've have in the other on our other show. And it was developed by the Gansu Meteorological Bureau of Chengdu Aircraft Design and Research Institute and Chengdu, or AVIC, Unmanned Aircraft System. So very interesting, Max, but you added something else to the show notes.
Well, you know, you think about rain. What was going through my head was Eric Clapton's Let It Rain. I had that playing in my head the entire time I was reading this article. So that, you know, sparked me. I had to go off to YouTube and see if I could find some videos.
It wasn't Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head?
No, it wasn't that. No. This was a different precipitation song. But my favorite video that I found was from a performance that Clapton actually did in Hartford at the Civic Center in May 1985. Clapton always had great concerts. But anyway, so I diverted myself somewhat, now, but also reading the article. One comment, David, that it's, I think maybe worth mentioning is, you described the Gansu Meteorological Bureau, how AVIC was involved. And this is entirely typical of Chinese development programs like this, where you have industry and government working in very close relationships to develop things like this. It's just the way it works in China. You've got these sort of quasi-government agencies, sometimes purely government agencies, working with commercial interests. And that looks like that's exactly what we're seeing here. But that's pretty typical.
Well, and the other thing that I was sort of snarkily saying is the Wing Lung 2 is really a Chinese version of the Reaper, the MQ-9.
Yeah, that's what you meant when you said, yeah, it looked familiar.
It has all of the qualities of the MQ-9. So if you go look at the pictures, you'll be seeing basically a Reaper. So don't fear the Reaper. It's only bringing rain.
Very good.
But let's talk about the repercussions of last week's big announcement. You know, we were going to take a vacation, but the FAA decided to drop a couple of bombshells on us. And now there's some big consequences.
Right. As you're alluding to, the FAA announced some final rules. One of them was the unmanned aircraft remote identification rules. And we thought they seemed pretty reasonable, and a lot of people have thought they've seemed pretty reasonable. But Alphabet's wing team does not think that. In fact, they have a big issue with it. A public affairs spokesperson for Wing said, at a basic level, the new rule would enable the real-time tracking of consumers' drone delivery orders by the general public. And so they're worried about a privacy issue here. Now, there was a recent blog post. Wing stated that, unfortunately, they said the final rule, unlike existing international standards, does not allow the use of equally effective network remote ID. And requires all UAS, no matter the use case, to use broadcast remote ID. And so that's one of the things we talked about last week, that the final rule talks about broadcast remote identification being either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. And the other method that was in the original proposal, and this is what Wing would like to see, is the network remote ID, where the drone would use something like the internet to put the identification data on. So this is being broadcast in the clear under this rule, either by Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. And Wing thinks this is a big privacy issue. I'm not so sure.
Well, their implication is if it's being flown by Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, someone could access the information of the drone flying by and get information about whatever the delivery is, whatever the product is.
Well, but they would have to infer that because the remote ID broadcast doesn't include anything about the cargo being carried, right? You'd have to infer that from, you know, the destination, where the control point was, what the destination was, you know. And you can only do that by Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, which means you got to be pretty close. So you can't be sitting 10 miles away trying to discern what someone is doing with a drone. You have to be right there on top of it. So
I agree with you. It's you know, it's always privacy concerns that comes up with these things. It's, we know also when we were having our discussion on Monday night about this, all of our pilots were like, well, how are we going to get access to that drone information from our airplane? Are we going to have to open up our cell phones and check our Bluetooth? So I think there's going to which I implied that, you know, Wing needs to realize that this is for small UASs. I think basically when we go to delivery drones, and I said this on Monday, a delivery drone will meet a different requirement and will have to use ADS-B because they're going to be bigger. They're going to take more of the airspace, you know, and it won't be a broadcasting issue. I don't know. I mean,
there's an irony here though, too, David, which is this objection is coming from Wing, a Google cousin. What's Google's business model? Is inferring information about everybody so that they can monetize that. And so now here they are saying, we don't, you know, you're going to be creating all this information. So I find that somewhat ironic. But I also, I don't know, I still don't buy the issue. I need to, they haven't convinced me yet. Let me put it that way. You know, in that blog post, they say this. They say, unlike traditional aircraft flying between known airports, commercial drones fly closer to communities and between businesses and homes. Okay. While an observer tracking an airplane can't infer much about the individuals or cargo aboard, I don't agree with that.
I was going to say, we know people who yeah, no. We'll disagree with that.
That's not right. So unlike tracking an airplane, as I said, an observer tracking a drone can infer sensitive information about specific users, including where they visit. Huh? Where they visit. I don't get that unless they mean where the drone lands, because that's where they are.
I mean, that's where the, right. We're assuming that there's a hub and spoke, a hub and spoke delivery. So someone will be able to track the fact that Amazon is delivering to this household on a regular basis.
But so what? You know, so what? Hey, the post office delivers there on a regular basis as well. I mean, that seems kind of weak. You know, they can infer where users spend time. What? How do you get to that point? And where they live.
This is Google, you know. Google,
yeah,
sometimes
they're
experts
at this,
I was going to say, sometimes Google, you just mention it in the atmosphere and it suddenly pops up on your feed. So
what their conclusion is, they say, Google, Wing says, American communities would not accept this type of surveillance of their deliveries or taxi trips on the road. They should not accept it in the sky. I don't think it's any different than what we already have.
And let's face it, everybody wants to track their packages when they're being, you know, it's a tough call. I mean, but you know what, Max, in all fairness, if this was the biggest complaint to come out of last week's announcements, we're doing pretty damn good.
Well, that's a good point.
We've seen announcements where there was complete uproar, and it's sort of been quiet other than this disruption, this discussion. Pretty much everybody was okay with the ruling. So, I mean, good for the FAA. I mean,
yeah. And there's an op-ed in Drone Life. This was authored by Brian Wynn, who's the AUVSI president and CEO, and also Kevin Burke, who's the president and CEO of Airports Council International, North America. And they're very positive on this new rule for remote ID. They thought it was, important, timely, something that we need. And they didn't voice any objections. So, there are others besides Wing who are raising privacy issues, but Wing is kind of the big yeah. elephant. But like I said before, and we can move on, but Wing, I need more convincing. You need to explain in greater detail why this is a major privacy issue. Because frankly, at this point in time, I don't see it.
Yeah, it is a bit of the kettle calling the pot black.
Yeah, so that's the funny part of the whole thing.
So it is very interesting. But let's talk about Uber for drones. And I thought this was, oh God, another delivery story, but it's not really quite. And it was from AFR.com technology. Sydney-based Aerologic wants to connect drone pilots with people who need drone imaging. We've talked a little bit about these kind of services before, but this one's sort of becoming pretty crystal clear.
This is an organization, Aerologics, that was incorporated 18 months ago, and they've just received a $1.5 million investment from Nightingale Partners. They've signed up a few hundred drone pilots already, they say. And the idea is those that need drone service in terms of imaging, for example, could basically engage a drone pilot to come and provide that service.
It's kind of the networking, you sign up as a drone pilot and then people search your name and like all of these service websites now. And it's an interesting thing because it's formed by a former Qantas pilot and a former technology consultant. And they're looking at it as pilots need jobs. And all they have to do is get a certificate added to their license. And this is in Australia. And then they can go fly drones, And it's another example of the gig economy falling into, in this case, drone photography and drone piloting, and at a fairly reasonable price.
They say that drone pilots can earn up to $80 an hour on their platform. Aerologix gets a 20% cut of any transaction. So I don't know if that $80 an hour is before or after the 20% cut that Aerologix takes. But they say they've been approached by pilots from Qantas, from Jetstar. They've had some interest from pilots in the Middle East. And these guys are not brand new to unmanned aviation. One of them had a drone photography business called AeroLens, which is a perfect name for a drone photography business, I think. And the other one comes from the R2 Robotronics drone swarm management platform.
Which, anytime you mention the letter R and the number 2, I get excited.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So this is an interesting, we see if this follows through. I know we've talked about these kind of organizations in the past, but I think maybe in this current economy, when there's not a lot of flying for airline pilots, and especially down in the Pacific where everybody's in lockdown, this might be a good way for those pilots to earn some additional income, if they get furloughed. So,
yeah. And they're also developing, they say, a flight navigation system, something that will automate the entire flight. And this is applicable to DJI drones. Although the article has a typo and they don't say DJI, they say DGI. But the idea is that complex flights could be piloted by less experienced pilots. And this flight navigation system, they say, is almost ready. So we'll be watching for that.
Yeah, so let's move to Arkansas. Okay.
Arkansas.
Walmart, which is in Bentonville, Arkansas, has opened up a new hub at Pea Ridge, or it's in the planning at least. This is going to be the first Walmart hub for drone delivery.
And this is going to be an effort with Zipline International. Of course, we've talked about Zipline a lot. Zipline is in partnership with Walmart. And Pea Ridge is a little town. I looked it up. Looks like a population of about 6,000. And it's in the very far northwest corner of Arkansas, north of the Ozark National Forest. And I think pretty much their only claim to fame in the past has been there was a significant Civil War battle near there. But they do have a Walmart. And so Zipline is going to operate from this Walmart store. They're going to service an area 50 miles in radius. And they say that their launch and release system will allow for a quick on-demand delivery in under an hour.
But there are some other added benefits, like eliminating carbon emissions, which lines up perfectly with sustainability goals by Walmart. The operation will begin next year. This is probably 2021, meaning this year. And if successful, they look to expand. Max, it's probably a good place to start drone delivery because, you know, there's not a lot there and the need would be there. So, and of course, Zipline is really gotten the delivery business down to a science. So, and I like this part. Now, I know you're on a quest to camp at all the national parks in the world. So you're going to go on a field trip to the Ozark National Park,
you bet.
National Forest. Yep. And then you can go to this place. And Zipline says they're going to open the facility for tours and STEM opportunities. So Max can go to Walmart, camp in the parking lot.
Yes, that's right.
And then get his STEM activities by watching the drone deliveries.
Yeah, and get a tour. Yeah, no, I'm definitely up for that, for sure. So I think that's cool. I think that's great that Zipline, I agree with you, David. I think it's great that Zipline is going to not only have the tours, but also make STEM opportunities available for local students. I think that's really a good thing.
So,
yeah, good for Zipline.
All right, good news story of the week. Armed with a drone. You know, all of this good news stories and stuff, why would they pick the phrase armed? You know, we've worked very hard on this podcast to avoid, talking about armed drones. But armed with a drone, a 19-year-old rescues four drowning fishermen off Kerala coast. This was from HindustanTimes.com. A fishing boat was missing off the coast of India, and an engineering student, 19 years old, approached the rescue workers and was told to go away.
Yeah, they weren't interested, but apparently he persisted, or somebody heard what was going on.
A local legislator intervened, and the student was allowed to bring his drone on a rescue boat. He sent the drone up when they were 11 nautical miles off the coast, and after 20 minutes, he found one man clinging to a log from the capsized boat. Rescue crews were immediately converged on that location, and three were also recovered. And after a wider search, a fourth was found. So they found all the fishermen on the boat because the kid had enough guts to want to fly his drone to help rescue them.
Yeah, so that is a good story. And I guess the implication in the article is that the rescue organization they learned a lesson about the utility of a drone for these kinds of search and rescue missions. So maybe they'll add that to their toolkit in the future.
Well, but let's also say our normal disclaimer that this 19-year-old student did go away when he was refused permission by the rescuers to help. if you are thinking that you want to be this way, I would say make contact with your local fire and police rescue services ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah. Just walking up.
You don't walk up in the middle of a crime scene or an event and say, oh, by the way, I'm here to help. They don't have time for you to do that. But if you go educate your local fire department or educate that, you know, and let them know that if you're available when they need help, we don't recommend walking up to as much as good intentions are great. We've seen what's happened in the wildfires out west here in the States and other places. So it's a matter of just be smart, fly sensible.
Yes. Good advice.
Well, the next video of the week, Max, is hot.
It's a volcano.
It's the Kilauea volcano, which has come back to alive. And it started erupting late last year again. And Geological Service released a video of a lava dome fountain that it formed. The quote in the story was, it's like a bubbler from Hades.
Yeah.
So the fountain is about 5 meters tall and 10 meters across. It's a lot bigger than what you would look. It looks in the drone video, I have to admit. And it was formed at the Lava Lake Inlet at Halamalaumau.
You're really going to try to say that, huh?
Well, I've been to Hawaii and I tried learning Hawaiian and,
Oh, okay. So I'll defer to your expert pronunciation.
Halamalaumau. But yeah, no, it's a bubbling, molten lava flow. It's pretty cool.
All right. That'll wrap up this episode, I think, unless you can think of anything else, David, we want to talk about. I want to thank you all for listening. This has been episode... You look like you're trying to say something.
No. Go, keep going.
All right. I gave you the opening, and I wasn't sure if you were going to take it or not.
No, you gave me the opening, and I didn't take it, but you stopped anyway.
Oh, sorry. So this has been episode 357 of the UAV Digest. You can find us at our website, theuavdigest.com. We have show notes for this and all of our episodes there. If you want to find the show notes for this episode and it's sometime in the future, instead of scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, you can just go to theuavdigest.com/357. That'll take you right to the show notes for this episode with links to all the stories we talked about.
And you know what? I do want to say that if you've got an opinion on this privacy thing that Max and I were discussing tonight,
yeah,
I really think I'd like to solicit feedback from you all and send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com, or better yet, send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com and join our Slack listener team. And maybe we can get a conversation going on our Slack team about privacy and drone ID. But other than that, you can find us, of course, on Twitter, on Facebook, and as Max always says, on LinkedIn, you can find both of us. That means you need to learn to spell flight and Vanderhoof. And I guess with that, Max, here it is. We're the first episode of 2021. So we're off to a new year.
Very good. It's about time.
So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Delaware.
And Max in Hartford.
Thank you for listening.